It's the Southwest Arkansas Sports Page on the Air, your weekly local sports podcast. And now, here's your hosts, Greg Revels and Tony Stowers.
And we're back with Season 2, Episode 44 of the Southwest Arkansas Sports Page on the Air, somewhere around 85.
Yeah. Yeah. Is this the last episode of season two?
It is the last episode of season two. Thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
It is.
And
in season three, we'll start with the number 45 so we can start getting some of these guys with higher numbers.
Yeah,
linemen.
A lot of greats.
Yeah.
Linebackers,
linemen.
Defensive ends.
Yeah. Some wide receivers.
Yeah.
You know, used to wide receivers were 80s.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're anything they want to be.
Right. Yeah. But all of them are anything they want to be anymore.
Pretty much. You're right. But we got some good number 44s. This is a great episode.
Yes.
And 44 is a great number.
Always.
Tony?
The great Henry Aaron has got to be the number one 44. What do you?
I don't know anybody any better.
No. I mean, most people consider him the true home run king. He did it without, you know, the aid of steroids.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, one thing Dad and I were talking about last night, and we'll get to the home run contest in a little bit, but you don't have to be a strapping you. You don't have to be Judge to hit these home runs. Henry Aaron was not a big guy.
No.
But, man, he had a smooth swing.
He had some bat speed.
He sure did.
Yeah.
And do you know, I read a book about him where he started off as a youth, basically self-taught, and he batted like what we call in West Virginia cow-handed.
Yeah.
For the longest time.
Cow-handed.
Well, that's what they call it. I was just there. I know.
It's called cross-handed.
No, cow-handed.
For everybody else.
Well, okay, cross-handed if you're from Arkansas. Cow-handed if you're my brother listening in Virginia.
Yeah, so Randy will know what it is.
That's right.
It's cow-handed, Randy. but Hank Aaron, great. The thing I remember when he hit number 715 to past Babe Ruth, the guy running out and running around
That guy would be tackled and knocked senseless today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he ran around with two bases with him.
He did.
Yeah.
He sure did.
Yeah.
And then and probably wasn't even escorted out of the...
No.
Different time, man.
Yeah, that's for sure.
I looking here at my list, the great Jerry West. I mean, although he's WVU royalty, I mean, you gotta acknowledge greatness. He's the logo for the NBA.
Mm-hmm. I remember watching the Shaq and Charles Barkley show. Mm-hmm. I always forget what it's called. That's just what I call it.
Yeah, NBA Today.
NBA Today. Yeah. And I think Kenny was bringing up, like, if Jerry West hadn't existed, we would never have the logo for the NBA. And Chuck was just like, it'd be just somebody else. No respect for Jerry West.
That could be a whole episode. If Jerry West never existed, who would be the logo for the NBA?
That's right.
There wouldn't be one.
John Riggins, great Washington Redskin.
Yeah, I didn't like him.
Well, I understand. But, man, he was a load to bring down. I would call him a fullback more than a running back.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like the Redskins always had a little, you know, kind of scat back in Riggins. But, man, Riggins was tough.
Remember, I don't remember who they were playing. I remember they were playing it was in the Super Bowl, though. I mean, it's like a – I don't know if it was fourth and one, and he just ran over somebody and ended up scoring.
I think it was the Broncos.
And he ended up scoring on that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a fourth and one. He's just going for 1 yard. He just, bam, and just takes off and goes the whole way. Not a fast runner either.
Mm.
Not the fastest.
Just powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pete Maravich.
Mm. Pistol Pete.
Yeah.
Now, that guy.
That's a legend.
You talk about a basketball player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a basketball player.
Even I know Pistol Pete Maravich.
Yeah.
And as much recognition as he gets, probably when you start talking about great players, probably underrated.
Yeah.
Definitely underrated.
Yeah.
And then the Iceman, George Gervin, another great basketball.
Is he 44?
Yeah. Well, that, according to this.
Okay. Okay.
You're not using Google Overview, are you?
I'm using AI.
Yeah.
Well, George Gervin, the Iceman, one of the smoothest basketball players I've ever seen play.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Awesome.
And I got a few Razorbacks.
Yeah. What's the Razorbacks?
First, we got one from New Boston, actually. Sean Davis played for the Razorbacks.
44.
Nobody knows that but me, but I know that. Marvin Delf, one of the triplets, was number 44. He was a great basketball player. Probably put the Razorbacks on the map currently, along with Ron Brewer, Sidney Moncrief, and Eddie Sutton.
Yeah.
Scott Hastings, who was a great basketball player, played for the Nuggets, and as far as I know, still calling games for the Nuggets. And Darnell Robinson was on the team when they won the national championship. Big player, big guy. And the one guy that got me interested in Razorback basketball before all these guys, Lanny Van Eman was the coach at that time, but Martin Terry was a basketball player for the Razorbacks in the early 70s. And he was number 44.
The 44 Razorbacks are plentiful.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and he was a great basketball player, and one of the guys that really got me interested in Razorback basketball. Now, right now, Carson Wiggins wears number 44. So there's a couple up. Joe Johnson, they've got him wearing number 44, but I don't remember him wearing number 44, but I thought he was number 20.
Well, and some of these lists will include if somebody just wore it one season.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah. So, you know, but I wanted to mention Joe Johnson. So, anyway.
There's some Razorbacks in there?
Yeah, there's a few Razorbacks in there. So,
in the mix.
We got a little different thing going on today, guys. We're not, it's summertime, so summer sports theoretically are down, although they're playing all the time. They got 7-on-7 camps going on. There's team camps going on in basketball. You know, they're playing summer baseball. Everything's doing it. But we're going to talk about some Cossetot athletics today. When we get the opportunity, we're going to talk to a couple of the coaches there and just see what's going on with them, get them a little preview of this next year. And, you know, some local sports. It's not high school, but we got a little extra time here before we start into season three. So we're going to do that. We appreciate them sponsoring us all year long. We appreciate all our sponsors.
Absolutely.
All year long. I mean, they do such an excellent job. I've been talking to several of them as we start the new season, and they seem to all be in again.
Awesome.
Is amazing to me.
It's a tribute to their commitment to the kids and our communities.
Yeah.
And there's no community that comes together like Southwest Arkansas.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. But before we do that, we're going to kind of talk about some different things, nationally that are going on, if that's okay.
Absolutely. What's going on nationally?
Well, Tony, what do you want to talk about first?
How about Deion?
Okay. Yeah.
How about Deion coming out in the Big 12 press conference and saying that we need some rules on this NIL thing. I agree with him that we need some rules on this NIL thing. What shocked me that it was Deion that put it out there. But you start thinking about Colorado, where he coaches, not in the SEC, not in the Big Ten. If there is a split, they're probably left out. I don't think that somebody comes and gets Colorado. So, it kind of makes sense from that perspective, but is it too late to get the horse back in the barn as far as NIL goes?
Are you asking me my opinion? In my opinion, yes.
Yeah,
I'm afraid you're right. I think they didn't do anything. They didn't do anything, and when they let something happen, they let it just go. It's just a thunderdome, and now. How are you gonna tell somebody they can't get $5 million? You gonna tell what was the Georgia quarterback's name that went to Florida State? I can't think of his name now.
I remember I'm a Leva.
That's all I remember.
Yeah, I'm a Leva left Arkansas.
Yeah.
Or one left Tennessee to go to UCLA. But the one that went to Florida State, he's getting $8 million.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Now, there's no way that they're going to set it up where you can get that much money.
No.
So first thing that's going to happen is they're going to limit it to, let's just say they limit it to $1 million for the top-rated players.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody's going to sue them.
Yeah.
And they're going to lose because it's free market stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Would it be collusion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
And so – I think it's probably, I mean,
cats out of the bag. Huh?
Well, I think so, and I think we're still going down that road, and we talked about this earlier, where the big are going to get bigger, the smaller are going to get smaller. There's going to be some in the middle that are going to be totally left out too. And so what you're going to end up having is probably three different divisions of Division I football.
I think that's very possible.
You're going to have like 32 teams that are not going to be NCAA.
You'll have the Power Four teams that are left out.
Right.
And then you'll have the group group of five.
Yeah. And then you'll probably have another group that doesn't pay anything.
Yeah.
Other than scholarships.
Right.
You know,
in the near future, there will be colleges that are doing it the old-fashioned way, you play for an education.
Yeah.
And I'm to the point now, and I wouldn't have said this a couple of years ago, especially when they were letting the group of five have a spot in the playoff, but I'm for a group of five playoff now. Let's just have a group of five champion. I mean, there's like 60 schools in the group of five. You're the best of 60 schools. That's something to celebrate, you know? Hmm. So, and I think people would watch a group of five playoff.
Yeah.
They watch the 1AA. It's not 1AA anymore, but they watch that playoff.
Sure.
Yeah.
They watch that. They also watch the Weed Eater Bowl. And so, I did.
No.
Yeah. And all I'm saying is.
That was the Frisco Bowl we went to, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually went to the Frisco Bowl.
We did.
Yeah.
I think if there's football on, people are watching it.
Yeah.
For the most part.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's me anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these people, they get on Facebook and say, there's too many bowl games. Watch Andy Griffith or Seinfeld or something. You don't have to watch football. It's not on every channel, but don't take away my football.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's 100 different channels. Just pick one.
But then you do feel left out. Like when there's so much, you know, and you feel like you have to watch it all, you know, it's a weird conundrum because then you're like, because even if you know what, I'm watching King of the Hill tonight. Forget this game. Yeah. And then you go on your phone and you're like, oh, what? You got to.
Yeah. Well, a lot of these bowl games are. You know, teams that maybe you didn't follow during the season, but they get in these bowl games, and especially these small colleges, they play their hearts out. And there's some great bowl games in those, pool and weed eater bowl games, we'll say, that type of game.
Yeah. Then you got sports bettors as well. These guys are going crazy on every little type of thing.
That's probably the biggest reason the small bowl games aren't going away.
Right.
To be honest.
Yeah.
ESPN needs programming as well.
That's right.
Oh, man. That's crazy. I don't know. Like, you don't think they could put any parameters or, like, put any kind of.
I think they can, but I think they'll get sued.
They'll get sued by the players?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because here's the deal. It's the ambulance chasers.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody's going to say, hey.
Yeah. Hey,
you know, need to. Yeah, you sue him, you can get twice as $10 million instead of.
You don't have to play a game.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know.
I got a buddy back home that's a minister, jump all over it.
Yeah. We've said it before. Just handing
it. He's a slash then. If he's a slash, you never trust a slash.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Handing any 18 or 19-year-old like $8 million is never going to work out. It's just not going to be good either.
No.
You know, it's I don't know.
No. No. And you know, I don't, you know, I have no, we have not seen yet, but we will. The damaging effect of giving these kids that much money.
Yeah.
There'll be somebody that comes up that something happens, you know, I don't know, or 5 years from now, you know, it's like Chuck Barrett talked to us that one time. He said, this potentially could be the most money these guys ever make.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing with it?
Yeah.
Are they buying shoes and cars?
Right.
Are they investing it? You know, if you're not investing it, how do you go from making $1 million a year for 4 years to $50,000 a year?
Yeah.
And you don't have any of that money.
Like how many college players right now are making over $1 million a year? Like a lot, right?
There's a bunch.
How many are going to make it into the NFL?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah. It's unbelievable how many college players are making more money in college than they would on a rookie deal in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is why they're staying more now.
Right, right.
Yeah, some of them are staying longer. I mean, just like the Georgia quarterback, and I'm sorry I can't remember his name, that went to Florida State.
It's not Beck, is it?
Yeah, it is Beck.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know where I got that.
Yeah, thank you.
I wasn't even looking at my phone.
You reached in.
Carson Beck, right?
Yeah, that's
right.
Carson Beck.
He went to Florida State. He's making more money there than he would have been offered.
Yeah.
And so you make it for 2 years. He can still, if he plays the way he's played, he'll still be in the same position.
Yeah.
You know, he's not hurting his draft stock.
No, unless he gets hurt.
Yeah. And that's a big chance he's taking.
And that's why you got insurance. They all have insurance.
Sure.
They've had
Lloyd's
insurance.
Of London.
Yeah. That's where Lloyd's of London makes all their money. But, you know, the interesting thing about Deion, there's two things about Deion that I think is interesting. One is he comes out and says this right after Shadur is no longer college eligible.
Right.
That's convenient.
Yeah, that's convenient. Secondly, he didn't throw any numbers.
Right.
And you got to have a plan. You know, it's like us sitting here talking, yeah, we need to limit that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
To what? Yeah, exactly.
To how much? This thing is so complicated. Yeah. Something that's happened since the last time we talked is the ruling came down where the NCAA is going to have to pay all these players. Yeah. And the colleges are going to, it ends up the colleges are going to have to all these players. It's like $20.5 billion. Is that right?
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, over a period of time. Yeah. And they got to go back and pay some old players.
Yeah.
And they don't even know where they're going to get the money.
Marshall called the NCAA and said, we're in for a 20 spot.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the University of Arkansas, I'm familiar with that. They fired people because of it.
Yeah.
They laid people off because they're having to pay that money.
Right.
So maybe they didn't need them. I don't know. But they did. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
Did you foresee this? Like, I remember when we first started talking about this, Greg was on top of it more than I was.
Yeah. Even if you keep the money thing, you know, the Wild Wild West, let's not open the portal in the bowl season.
Yeah, that's got to be.
That's the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
Who thought of that?
Yeah.
That is the stupidest thing ever. Wait till after the national championship and then open the portal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why not, like, make them longer contracts where you at least have to stay with the team?
Well, to get paid, if your team makes a bowl, you got to play in the bowl.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's...
You're not asking much there.
No.
But I remember when this first started, like, just in my mind, and I may have been naive, I just thought, I liked the idea, like, hey, yeah, maybe a star quarterback's going to be making, like, $250,000 that year or something like that. Like, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, me
you
too.
You know, like, and like, that, I'm okay with that. Because
I didn't think it ever gets $8 million.
Yeah, he's in the video game. He's all over the TV that everybody's, millions of people are watching. Like, he's got to get something. But I didn't think it would reach $8 million.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that tells you is you have no and when I say you, I'm talking about us.
Yeah, everyone.
And everybody that's listening here has no concept of the amount of money that is made through those sporting events.
Right.
It's unbelievable how much money.
It has to be.
I would love to know, and I'm just talking about the Razorbacks, just say there's 70,000 people at a football game. Just how much money they make off of alcohol sales.
Do they have to report that or no? Like, do they report
it's
that
probably
stuff?
Somewhere. I don't know if it's separate. You could probably find it out if you really wanted to know.
Because that's what my thing was. Like, there was so much money being made, and the players aren't seeing any of it. And I thought that was a little wrong. But this is completely teeter-totter to the other side now.
But see, the other thing about that, though, is, Tony, tell me if I'm wrong. The schools aren't putting this money in.
Right. Mm-mm.
This comes from other places.
Yeah.
This is donors, boosters.
Yeah. This was money this that was
the
not
nasty,
in college
dirty
athletic
stuff that we used to not talk about.
That's exactly right. This is everything that was illegal, legal.
Yeah.
That's why SMU got the death penalty
in
the
80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and even, okay, so if a college player, superstar, makes $8 million, but like, I just didn't think it would be this thing where everybody's leaving, joining, the portal's going, like, it's like nothing is stable. Everything is super unstable, you know, and I didn't expect that either.
Well, it's...
Because I don't want to say a guy shouldn't make as much money as he possibly can at the same time. I mean, I'm okay with that, but then, like, you got to stay. You got to play in the team that you, like, signed for.
Didn't Arkansas... pay somebody and they left before they even took the field.
Yeah. I'm a Leva.
Yeah, I'm a Leva.
I'm a Leva.
I'm a Leva's little brother. I'm a Leva too.
And right now the school doesn't have a lot of recourse, do they?
Well, they're trying.
Yeah.
You know, they gave him $400,000 before he ever hit the field.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get $200,000 back. So he's getting $200,000 for spending 3 months in Fayetteville.
It feels like dealing with the mob.
Hey, I'm a Leva. We put this in your Vimo.
Yeah. Yeah, we want $200,000 back at least. And he just leaves him on red. Like, what? I mean.
I mean, he doesn't have to do anything. There's no. And then I don't even think there's a contract. He went to UCLA.
He went to UCLA.
Yeah. But you know, the thing about it is that there's got to be a reasonable solution to this. And the only way it's going to happen is if you break these schools out. Because they're. The legal system will not let it happen any other way, in my opinion. Mm. You know what I'm talking about, Tony?
I do.
Because if you try to limit, you know, a starting quarterback to $1 million, Carson Beck's going to sue.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll just use him for example.
Sure, sure.
He'll just say, I'm making eight, and I want to make eight.
Yeah.
Why are you limiting me? Mm-hmm. And the judge is going to rule on their side.
Yeah.
So what you're going to have to do is you're going to have a group of schools that do that. That pay whatever, which will be basically come down to a training ground for the NFL, I guess, you'd call it.
Yeah.
But they're making more money than they would in the NFL, which is weird.
Yeah.
But then you'll have another group of schools that may pay. They may have a rule system.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if a kid voluntarily submits himself to that, then you don't have to worry about being sued.
That's right. And so I think that's what's going to happen. One of the things you mentioned about the transfer portal and things changing all the time. See, that's the difference. And if you're old enough, Tony is, I am, to remember, that was even true in the pros. You know, if you got drafted by the Cowboys or the Steelers, you pretty much played your whole career with them. Very seldom. I mean, they were almost looked down upon if they went somewhere else.
Yeah. Right.
You know, no, they didn't trade them or really anything.
And go ahead.
So you had your whole team there that you followed for, you know, 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't Kurt Flood in baseball the first free agent. Yeah.
Yep. If you think about it, it's like a guy plays for a team for that long, and then he goes to another team. That team doesn't like him because he's been running over them for the past how many years? Yeah. And it's like, well, we don't want him. You know? And it's like no one's happy when somebody gets over to a new team.
So then free agency comes along for pro athletes.
Yeah.
But you still had the kids in college. You know, if you had Darren McFadden, he played for the Razorbacks. He played for, well, at that time, 3 years. So you had him for 3 years. You knew that. Mm-hmm. Well, if you had Darren McFadden at the Razorbacks right now somebody's going to double his pay.
Yeah.
So he's going to be playing for Texas next
And he just
year.
Leaves whenever he wants, basically?
Well, there's two periods right now. There's one's in December, I think.
One's after the regular season.
Yeah.
After the Army-Navy game.
Right.
And then one's before the bowl season's over, right?
Something like that.
Or no, it's in April.
Yeah.
That one's the one that's in the bowl season.
Yeah.
And you know, so you got two times, and one is, what's weird is one is during the bowl season, so if somebody wants to transfer, then they're not going to play with you. They played with you all year long.
Yeah.
Your quarterback's going to another team. He doesn't play in the bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
Those bowls make money off those things, too, that they use for philanthropic.
Yeah. And then can he play in the other team's bowl?
No.
So he's not playing at all during the bowl season.
No, but I bet you know. And then the second thing you do is with the way it was with two of them, just like I'm a Leva in Tennessee, he went through the entire spring practice, didn't play the last game, and then left.
They've
used him the whole time.
Yeah.
Something's got to change there, and I think they can change that part of it. I don't think they can change the money part of it.
Well, and the thing is, whatever changes they make, if the SEC and Big Ten doesn't like it, they just say, we're out of here.
Yeah.
And they do their own thing.
Well, that's what
Which is going to happen anyway.
Right.
So it's going to be like mini NFL or something, plus, and then the rest of the NCAA.
It'll be the NFL on Saturday, is what it'll
be.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be.
Yep. So probably wore that out enough.
But, I don't know. We talk about it every time, and every time I'm blown away.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's a very pertinent topic right now.
And I just thought it was odd that Dion brought it up.
Yeah.
For some of the reasons that Greg was talking about.
Yeah. But something else we can talk about real quickly. Major League Draft happened.
17-year-old kid goes number one.
Yeah.
At Eli Willits.
Yeah.
Went to the Nationals.
His dad was a major leaguer.
Yeah.
interesting to me. I mean, first thing I want to say, congratulations to the Razorbacks. First time they had four first-round draft picks. So that's great. Interesting to me, you got the college player of the year, Awia Aloy. And he was probably the eighth shortstop taken.
Yeah.
And you know, when you see – I mean, I'm gonna say this, and Tony's much more of a baseball guy than I am, but I would say the SEC, if you play in the SEC a couple of years, that's probably equivalent to good Double-A baseball.
Oh, easy.
At least.
Yeah.
And so he's played 2 years of good Double-A baseball. They're taking kids out of high school right and left over him. That I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, these scouts, they call it upside, you know, or their ceiling being higher, and you know, they think they can see everything. Me, I'm kind of a — that was impressive.
Yeah.
We'll
cut that out.
me, I'm more of a bird in the bush guy. I'm going to take the guy that I know can do it rather than the guy that might be able to do it a little better in the future. But that's not the way everybody thinks.
Well, you know, I looked at the Texas Rangers. They took a high school third baseman.
Yeah.
So here's my deal. I think Aloy's maybe on the at the major league level is maybe an iffy person for shortstop with quickness and speed and all that. He can play third base.
Yeah.
And he can hit.
Yeah.
And you know he can hit.
Yeah.
And so they talk about what his strikeout to walk ratio was. They do the same thing in the major league.
That's exactly right.
That's what they're doing now. Exactly what he was doing.
Everybody's Dave Kingman.
Yeah, I mean, but anyway,
Google it, young people.
Yeah. Which I didn't understand. I didn't understand that. But other than that, pretty excited about, you know, Gage Wood. You know, kind of a comeback story of coming back from injury and getting a first round.
Yeah.
You know, that's pretty good. And
is that due to the no hitter?
Yeah. He's a guy. Yeah. His last pitching performance was a no hitter.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's
so helped. He went in the first round.
Yeah, he did.
Where?
The Phillies.
Yep.
That's cool, man.
Yeah. He went to the Phillies. And then you had,
he's somebody that could pitch really quickly too. A lot of these guys linger in the minor leagues for years. I don't see Wood being that guy.
No. He may be a reliever, but
yeah.
Yeah, but now, then you had, and I can't remember the other pitcher's name, two in a Davalon, the left fielder, went to the Dodgers, and so did the pitcher. And I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. I'm horrible with names.
Four Razorbacks went. That's in the first round. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, that is good. Let me see if I can come up with that.
Did anybody have any more than that?
I don't know.
I wouldn't think so.
Mm. I mean, there were a lot of high school players.
I mean, there's 30 Major League Baseball teams, and there's 300 colleges that play Division I college baseball.
Gosh.
I would say nobody had more than four.
Yeah.
I would be shocked
if
anybody had more than four.
Well, what's as interesting is there's like 44 picks.
Yeah, because of compensatory picks. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overall, 44 picks?
In the first round.
See, in the first round.
This is where the Pirates, this is where they make hay, because people sign their good players away, and then Major League Baseball says, we're going to give you a draft pick so you can draft a 17-year-old kid to replace your superstar.
Yeah. Zach Root. He was the other pitcher. Good pitcher for the Razorbacks. Did good.
So two pitchers and?
And a shortstop and an outfielder.
Nice.
Yeah, in the first round. So, first time they've ever had four go. So, congratulations to them on that. But it still just astounds me that you see these players. And you know, of course, Aloy was one. I mean, he was the major league player. I mean, the college player of the year.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you. They picked 6, 7, 8 high school shortstops before they picked him.
Yep.
Is there why?
I think it's based on these scouts. They think they know everything, and they just see more upside in the kid. With Greg and I were talking when you were out of the room. I'm more of a bird in the bush guy. I'm going to base it more on what I see now. But a lot of scouts aren't like that.
Mm. So they're going to take a guy and they're going to put a 17-year-old kid in single A ball. Yeah. Which means he's going to be riding a bus that's got a cardboard seat on it.
Yeah.
I mean, it
you
really.
You ever seen Bull Durham?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. And that glorifies it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they don't have anything to do.
Right.
I mean, you're 17.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You're sitting in a motel room 80% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You practice for 2 hours in the morning, then you go play a game at night.
Right.
The rest of the time, what are you doing?
Playing video games.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, 17, I mean, what would I have done?
You know, I mean, it's just, yeah.
Oh, it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's the problem you got with all these high school
kids. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, they're looking for, they're trying to pick a flower out of a minefield is what they're doing.
Yeah, really. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, anything else you want to talk about on that?
On the draft, no. I think we covered it really well.
Okay. Okay. Well, we're gonna talk about some other things in just a minute, but we do have one of the Costock coaches here, and we're going to talk to them now. Okay, we're here with Coach Justin Hinman of the Queen Colts. Excuse me, the Costock Colts.
They play in DeQueen.
Yeah, they do play in DeQueen. They play other places too, but they are. And Aaron, he's the coach of the UA Costock Colts boys and girls soccer team, right?
Yes, sir.
And you've been here for how long now?
Been here for 2 years. It's going to be our third year this fall.
Okay, so into the third year, and starting a program from scratch has got to be kind of a monumentous task.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely been a project for sure, but it's been a lot of fun, absolutely a lot of fun. You know, we've had very small numbers our first 2 years, a little bit smaller numbers our first 2 years. We started more localish because we didn't have an international program for soccer. That's huge, having international kids. Right now, this fall, we'll have kids coming from all over the world, all over Africa, Europe, you know, South America. So it's growing a lot. But no, it's been fun starting it up for sure.
And so you're not only the coach, you're also the recruiter, the field, take care of the field. You do it all, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's 24/7. I mean, whenever I get home, it'll be 2 a.m. and I have a guy waking up in England texting me saying, "Hey, what do we need to do?" And so it's nonstop. I mean, I go to, you know, I've been to Houston, Dallas, Memphis, Tulsa, Bentonville, Little Rock, all over, you know, the country as well, recruiting. And then yeah, field maintenance as well. I'm up there on the field checking it out every day. I know we've aerated it. I picked up countless rocks, branches, just making sure the field's nice and ready for this fall. So it's everywhere.
Which is a new thing. Y'all got a new field.
Yeah.
Is this the first? Y'all played on it last year some, right?
Yeah. So we purchased it last July from EO, of course.
Yeah.
And, you know, we purchased it, and it was right before our season started. So it made it very tough for us to put money into it, to kind of invest into it, because we had these kids out there practicing. You can't really be, you know, seeding it, doing all we needed to. So now, you know, it's been a year since we've had it. We put a lot of time, invested a lot of, you know, energy into that field. So it's, I would say last fall, it needed a lot of work. It was definitely a work in progress, but right now the field's looking better and better every day. This fall, I'm definitely excited for it. The field's nice. It's fully fenced. We have a new scoreboard up, so it's looking really nice out there.
That's all right. Cool. That's great.
Explain to me the international component. I don't know a lot about soccer, I'm going to be honest with you, but I went to Marshall University. Marshall's a soccer powerhouse.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that I noticed on their roster is they have one kid from West Virginia, and he's the only kid from the United States.
Yep.
So how do you recruit internationally, and how will that impact your team?
Yeah, so Marshall is an absolute powerhouse. They won the national championship, you know, a couple years ago. No, I mean, Marshall is a heavily international school. I feel like for junior colleges, which we are NJCEA, soccer is typically 99% international. And so, I mean, what I get sent is, you know, I have dozens and dozens of agents that they'll just message me, "Hey, coach, here's 65 profiles," and I will just scroll and scroll and scroll,
wow,
watch highlight video, full game, full game, full game. They'll say, you know, what position they are, where they're from, their playing background, what they think they can offer, this and that. And so a lot of kids, I guess, for us being a junior college, kind of a one thing that we get sent are a lot of non-qualifiers. It's players that may have played professionally or players that for some reason they're non-eligible for NCAA. So they come to us for a year, 2 years, and that makes them eligible to go to NCAA. So, yeah, I get sent, you know, players from all over. I mean, we have It's just agencies that I've kind of built up as a player as well as a coach, of course.
Well, I always wondered about that because, you know, you're doing the recruiting as well. And when that recruiting's worldwide, I mean, it seems like a massive task. But it seems like that you kind of get to pick and choose a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's making your roster up. I mean, I know that if I need a center back, you know, I like to, you know, see what center backs are out there. I get sent all these different profiles, and I'm like, would he fit our system? Would he fit what I want, you know, our goal as a team to be? You know, so it's a lot of fun, though, for sure. You get sent all these different profiles and just trying to pick out which pieces you think will fit to make the whole project work.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And, of course, you're also competing against every other junior college in the nation for these people, right?
Yeah, of course. This fall we play play the number one team in the country. They won the national championship this past year. We play the number two team in the country who lost that team in the national championship. So we play, you know, them as well as a couple other ranked schools. So we'll have a lot of opportunity, though, for us to definitely showcase what we have here.
Are you playing them at home or are you playing them on the road?
So some are home, some are away. It's a blended schedule. Right now, girls, we have 15 games on our schedule. Guys, we have 18, so we have a little bit more guys on our roster. Our schedule should be out this coming week. Okay. I know we're designing it right now. I'm trying to fill a couple of gaps where we've had some teams back out. That's just typical how it is.
Sure.
So, but our schedule should go out. I'm thinking this next week we should have our full schedule released.
So are you in a league? I mean, like, I know the Colts basketball teams, in a league of junior colleges kind of in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Are you in a league like that in soccer?
We are. It's just a little bit different structure because for basketball, I think they have 9 or 10 teams in their conference.
Yeah.
Soccer, there's only 2 teams. So it's us and National Park College, which is in Hot Springs.
Yes.
So like Rich Mountain, they are in our region. However, they're NJCEA D1. Right. So they play Murray State, they play Northern Oklahoma Enid, they play, you know, Connor State. Our region, Region 2 of NJCA D2, only consists of us and National Park College. So previously, North Arkansas College up in Harrison, they were in it, but their soccer program got shut down. It's a different atmosphere for Arkansas recruiting, for sure. I mean, that's why I try to get a lot of local players because it's, you know, trying to, hey, come down to Arkansas to play soccer right now. It's growing. So people are like, Arkansas, you know, what's in Arkansas? But we're trying to change that, you know. I mean, I think that going to this third year would definitely be a lot better.
Yeah, one thing that I didn't get to mention about you is you are from Arkansas originally, right?
Yeah.
You grew up in Little Rock, right?
Yep.
And went to school at Pulaski?
Catholic High.
Yep. Okay. I knew it was one of the private schools. I couldn't remember. So you're a Rocket then.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm born and raised.
Yeah. All right. But you know, so you know about Little Rock, Arkansas soccer and a lot about that. But looking at the teams for this year, can you give us a little bit about we'll talk about the girls first.
Yep.
What about, just give us a little bit about the girls, about who you got coming back, what new players you got. You know, I've gotten to know a girl that I see at a restaurant that's from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she's gone back to Florida now, but she's coming back this fall, and just you know, all these kids integrate into our community, doing different things. You see them all over the place. So, just tell us a little bit about them, just for a few minutes, and what you expect out of them this year.
Yeah, I mean, no, we have some very good returners on our women's side. Probably one of the twins is who you've seen, Giselle and Laura. They're both from Miami. They played club soccer, you know, their whole life. You know, they're small, but they're feisty. They'll, you know, give 110% when they're on that field. You know, smart girls, they give 100% in the classroom as well, which is definitely something that I like. Those are two big returners for us. We also have a girl from Dallas coming back that she was a huge role for us this past year. She was an all-region player, first-team all-region player this past year. She's returning, and then, you know, we have a lot of newcomers this coming year. Definitely going to be a younger squad. A lot of girls from Arkansas, too. I mean, I say a lot. We have 3 girls right now, but that's still a good portion to pull in, especially not just from D-Queen. We'll have a good amount of locals on our team, but outside of D-Queen, we have a girl from Bentonville. They made it to the state semifinals this past year in 6A, which is the highest division in Arkansas. We have a girl coming in from Danville, Arkansas, a very small town, but, you know, that she's very, very talented. And then we have a lot of girls from Miami. We have a lot of Haitian girls coming in. Kind of a connection that I built up this past year. So we have some girls. We have a goalkeeper coming in. She played in the last Women's World Cup. She She's Haiti's national team backup goalkeeper. So I'm absolutely amped to work with her. So we have some good pieces coming in. Going to be a younger team, but definitely a lot of potential for sure on the women's side.
That sounds really cool. Well, what about the boys now?
Yeah, guys, we're going to have a very, very large roster for guys. You know, I'm trying to give a lot of these guys opportunity. You know, it's guys, you know, girls, it's, you know, trying to get what you can get. Guys, there's a lot of guys. Right now, I plan on us having probably 35 to 38 guys on a roster this fall. It's going to be a bigger roster. It's why we have a lot more games, though, because I want to make sure all these guys are getting game minutes, getting opportunity for them to show themselves. We have a lot of returners, 13 returners, two all-region players. We have a guy that's coming back that's had 15 goals, 5 assists this past year, which is very good. Performed well against the four-year schools we played against. We have a center mid coming back, Spax. He's from Zimbabwe. That kid is craziest work ethic you'll ever play. You know, we had you'll ever see. You know, we had a game where we played in 10v11. We had a couple games we played 10v11 the whole entire 90 minutes, and that kid, minute 90, last second of the game, is just full sprinting back, just tracking back, working back on defense. Mm. You know, we have some players that may not have, you know, fully fulfilled their spot this past year, but, you know, they've gotten their feet wet, and I think year two, I think they can kind of grow in. That confidence level is starting to pick up. I saw it this spring. A lot of our guys this past fall, that it was their first time playing college soccer. They were a little nervous, so this spring, they stepped up, and I think a couple of them will have some big roles. And, yeah, again, we have a lot of newcomers coming in. I think we have probably around 20 to 25 newcomers for our guys team. So it's going to be a, you know, I have them coming up this first week of August. It'll give us 3 full weeks of preseason to kind of get them suited with what we have going on here.
Well, great.
Man, so I'm impressed with him.
Yeah.
Being about a one-man show, just, and all the hats you have to wear. And man, it sounds like you got it going on.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of free time, do you?
No. And I do have Franklin. I do have Franklin Bahina. He helps me out a lot.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, he's my assistant coach, so he helps me, you know. I'm trying to get a lot of locals, too, so I've kind of tasked him on, you know, helping me with the local side of things, because he has a lot of connections around town. But, no, yeah. it's a full-time job.
Does
for sure.
The Queen, you know, speaking of soccer powerhouses, the Queen is a high school soccer powerhouse. And does that help you, that element help you? The community has a love for soccer. Does that help you?
Yeah, it's going back and forth. First year we had 2023, we had a good amount of locals. I would say we had around 15, 16 locals between guys and girls. This past year, very young class. Yeah. They had 3 girls that graduated on the soccer team for
right.
Women's.
Yeah,
and
they were
already young. One was going to UFIS, another had a full ride for track and field. So it kind of goes back and forth. This past year, very young team as well. There's a couple of juniors right now about to be seniors on the women's side that I'm very interested in, as well as the guys' side. I know there's probably 3 or 4 right now that are going to be upcoming seniors that I'm very interested in. We will have some locals, though. But no, I mean, D-Queen, I've known about the soccer community. Being from Little Rock, we used to play D-Queen High School. And I remember I was like, D-Queen? I was like,
where is that, right?
But they were good. And yeah. I was impressed with just the size of the team. I go out to all the high school games. I go to every high school game here. They have 50 players lined up on their sideline. I'm like, holy cow, like this many kids want to start this, you know? And so we have a youth club starting up now here. We're 1 year into that. So it's growing as a community, but the community has been a huge part. I mean, they're definitely in full support of what we have
that's
going
cool.
on.
Yeah, that's really cool. Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
No, I mean, stay active on our social media. Like I said, our schedule will be coming out, and these kids, they love the support from the community. You know, we try to get heavily involved in the community. The majority of our men's and women's soccer programs help out with our D-Queen Soccer Association, so they coach these little kids. So we try to get them involved with the community, but they want to, you know, they want to help out where they can. They want to show, you know, teach what they've learned, because it's kind of a new thing for having structure in D-Queen. So, you know, come out and support. You know, and I guess you can reach out to me anytime if you have any questions.
Okay. Well, one other thing I'll mention, the college soccer schedule is a fall schedule.
Yep.
So you play in the fall, where the high school schedules are a spring schedule. So if, you know, you're looking for something to do in the fall soccer-wise, you can go out and watch the Colts and Lady Colts play soccer right here, right down the road on Colin Ray Drive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
We sure do.
Justin Hinman, the head soccer coach for the UA Cossetot Colts and Lady Colts. We're here now with Coach Stan Asumnu from the Cossetot Colts. He coaches both the boys and the girls teams in basketball. And, Coach, we just are glad to have you here. We appreciate you coming in. Just want to talk to you a little bit about how things have gone for you. You've been here a couple of years now, and you know, and then talk about the upcoming season for a five. So, if you would just give us a tell us a little bit about yourself, just real quickly, and where you're at with the program and you feel as we go into the new season.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. Definitely enjoy, you know, sharing about our program and as we're growing and getting better. I'm originally from Houston, Texas, born and raised. Then I went off to the University of Tennessee, you know, and played my college basketball and football there. And then from there, it landed me opportunities to, you know, do NFL Pro Day and, you know, NBA combines and different things of that sort. Landed me a professional career in basketball for a good 8-9 years, and then got into coaching and working with kids. And so then it landed me the opportunity to start coaching college basketball. And first stop was at Texas A&M International in Laredo, which is an NCAA Division II school. And then landed me the next year after that here at University of Arkansas, Cozzetot, which I've been here for 3 years now.
Yeah, and so a little culture shock coming into DeQueen and Sevier County, right?
Yeah. It's been cool, but it was different at first, you know, just getting the adjustment. But I will say it was a great experience for me. I enjoy, you know, being here and growing a program. And that was one of the things for me, growing a program as well as growing myself as an individual, being able to handle other things that I wasn't handling at my first stop.
Well, you know, just to talk about you just for a minute more, just interesting. So did you play both football and basketball at Tennessee?
Yes, sir. So I started off with basketball, of course, my first, you know, 4 years of, you know, basketball. And then I ended up football. At the time, Philip Fulmer was the coach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he kind of reached out to me in my senior year about coming out and playing football. And so, yes, I was doing basketball and football and had a chance to get that great experience. And obviously, you know, everybody says if I had an extra year to, you know, do a little bit of football, who knows what could have happened.
Yeah. Well, just interesting that you were, so you had to be an excellent athlete to be able to play two sports at that high college level. So
absolutely. That's what I was saying.
I credit all that to my parents, man. You know, my mom and my dad.
Good DNA.
They were athletes as well, too, in their own respective sports. My dad, you know, played soccer. My mom, she did track. And so, you know, one thing when we were growing up, they never forced it on us, but it was more of focus on your academics. And then, of course, you know, if you want to play ball, you know, make sure you're going to do it when you start it, make sure you finish, you know, as long as you keep working hard towards that. So, I come from a family of athletes and just very blessed to be able to, you know, do the things that I've been able to do.
Well, we're really glad you're here at Cozzetot and what you're doing there. Tell us a little bit about the programs. Maybe start with the girls.
Yes. Yeah, so the girls program, obviously, you know, when I got here, you know, 3 years ago, just changing the program and just making things different. And so we've done really well over the last 3 years. I've set a bunch of records, you know, whether most wins, most points scored in the season, all-region players, players moving on to go play at the next level, just finishing in the top, you know, two, you know, in my second year here. And so being consistent with that, the girls program is in a good place. Obviously, we want to hopefully strive to win some championships and some conference championships and have a chance to go to the national tournament. That's something that a goal of ours that we haven't done yet. And so hopefully, you know, this year's group can maybe hopefully get us over the hump. And if not, we keep striving to do the things that we need to do to get there.
So when you look at your roster that you have for this year, is it heavily locally flavored or is it all over the place or?
Yeah, it's pretty much all over. I would say we have some girls, you know, from Arkansas, you know, on our mm-hmm. This upcoming roster. We will be young, you know, this year. We graduated a lot of girls last year, and so we'll be, you know, young. I wouldn't say kind of like a rebuild and more of a retool. And so for me, I'm excited for that because that's part of the thing with the junior college. You know, it's going to be turnover with your roster, mm-hmm. you know, from year in and year out. So, we do have kids, you know, in Arkansas area. We got kids in Texas, kids Oklahoma, you know, and things of that sort. So we and possibly some kids from Louisiana. So it'll be kind of spread out all over.
So do you, with the girls, and I know it can be the same, but with the girls versus the guys, do you have a lot of kids that are that you look at that are maybe for grade reasons or some reason they didn't get drafted or get recruited by a Division I school? You know, that, but they're looking for a year here or 2 years here, and then moving on. Do you have a lot of those?
Yes, sir. So, yeah, we have kids that are – normally we have kids that are transfers from maybe other programs. We also have kids that are obviously maybe were looked over during recruiting and maybe just maybe needed a year to develop and grow as a person, as an individual. And so now with the landscape of how, you know, college basketball is, it's going to be very tough for, you know, a lot of these high school kids to get those, you know, D1, D2 opportunities because of the whole, you know, transfer portal and things of, you know, teams are older. They want older teams. So high school kids now, obviously, if you're good enough and you can play at those levels, you go straight out of high school. But sometimes you might have to take another route, maybe go junior college for like a year and just get yourself, you know, re-recruited. And you never know what could happen for you there.
Right. Right. Well, I just wondered if it was a little different for girls than it was for boys. So talked about the girls. How about the boys?
Boys, obviously the boys, we are continuing to grow. Each year it seems like it's a different year. My first year, you know, we finished, I think, sixth in the conference. And then my second year, we finished fourth. And, you know, of course, we had a goal to finish top three in the conference, you know, this last year. But we finished, I believe, sixth or seventh in our conference last year. And for me, it was just more of a – you know, I can't wait for this year just to kind of get back on the court with the new guys that we're going to have and new opportunity. The boys' side, it's tough. It's competitive. And the girls' side is competitive as well, too. But the boys, it's very competitive. Our league is tough. It's competitive. You have to come to play every night. Guys are having opportunities to move on to next level as well, too. And so I enjoy the challenges that it comes with. But for me, I look at it as goals of ours, you know, for us, like being a team that, you know, wins a conference title, a team that can get to the national tournament. These are things that have not been done yet at Costat. And so for me, I feel like those are great, you know, goals, you know, to work with, you know, these young men and young women, you know, obviously of achieving those things and giving them more exposure.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. I know it's very tough. Now, I do know, or I believe I know this, you have some more international flavor on the boys' team, right?
Yes, yes. So, yeah, last year we had three kids from international, two from the Netherlands, they were twins, and one kid from Belgium. This year we'll probably have, when it's all said and done, maybe anywhere from 6 to 8 internationals on our team. So that is a big step up from that. But for me, like we talked about it last time, I want to mix my team up and have some international flavor with our U.S. guys and just kind of – it's a great mixture, and especially if you get the right group of guys that all buy into the same thing. And two, for the domestic kids, some of these guys, it's the first time ever playing with international players, and then you get to learn about how things are back home for them, you know what I mean, and where they're from. And so I think it's a very unique situation. Just as international guys, some of these guys have already played with the domestic kids, you know, in different places, whether it was prep school, high school, or maybe other institutions. But I think some of our U.S. guys, you know, it's different for them.
Right. Well, it's definitely a learning experience for both of them. And I'm going to assume that the style of play is a little bit different.
Yes.
European style is a little bit different than you play here.
Yes, sir.
And so there's adjustment there by both. You know, I shouldn't say that. I started to say you don't see 7-footers taking 3-pointers, but they do now.
They do now.
But you know, I think that, and that's part of the European influence on American basketball.
Yes, sir.
I think.
Yeah.
It's more more of a wide open, more shoot it when you're open, you know, and you got to have players that can shoot from anywhere in every position,
yes,
almost. But so that's interesting that you said that. I didn't realize that, but both ways they're learning about the different cultures, both sports wise and just living wise. So
yes,
that's something that's really great. So got any names you want to throw out for us this year? They're going to be just, we want to be watching for as we go over to the historic Bank of Blocksburg Gymnasium.
I would say, you know, right now, just obviously for us, I say on the women's side, you know, it's going to be fairly a new team. We'll have probably one returner, because she was a freshman last year. Her name was Valerie Scoggins. Everyone else that's coming in will be a new, you know, athlete for our women's program. And also, too, I just want to put it out there, we are still recruiting on the women's side, so we still have some more spots still available. I mean, we have about 4 to 5 more spots available on the women's side. So, you know, anybody looking for an opportunity or, you know, want to come out and visit or work out, definitely on the women's side, you definitely come out. As far as on the men's side, it's going to be a mixture of, we have 3 returners coming back. It'll be the 2 boys from the Netherlands, Serrano and Chavinho. Those are the twins. And then we have Night and Day, who was our big 6'10 post from New Mexico. Those guys are returning. And then also possibly the reemergence of Dylan Glover. You know, Dylan Glover was a big-time shooter for us last year, but he got hurt. He played 4 games. And he was on a tear. He was averaging about 15 points a game, shooting 50% from the 3, 100% from the line. I mean, that just tells you he was on his way to doing something special for us. So he's now back healthy. And so those would be the returning guys. New guys, I mean, as of right now, like our roster, everything will be final and set, you know, hopefully by the end of this week or next week.
Okay.
Be final and set. But at least the returning players, those are the returning players that were on our roster that we plan to have back with us. And kind of just see where everything goes. It's kind of going to be a mystery kind of year. I think there's going to be a lot of players that are going to emerge into some really fine players. I mean, it'll be very exciting for you guys to come on and see the team.
Well, that's what coaching's all about, man.
Yes, sir.
Melding those old with the new and doing all that, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, so now I got a question for you.
Okay.
I just want to make sure I understood. Night and day. That's not 2 people. That's 1 guy,
that's
right?
That's 1 guy.
Okay.
Night and day, yeah.
Okay.
6'10 from New Mexico, man.
I thought, man, here comes Night and Day. We're in trouble.
Parents give me a name like that.
Well, yes. They looked at you and it just didn't fit.
I guess you're probably right about that.
Yes, sir.
But so you want to talk about where you play a little bit just for a second, so we can just, you know, sure. I know people have heard it, you know, we talk about it all the time, the historic Bank of Blocksburg Gymnasium in Locksburg, Arkansas, where the Blue Darters played when I played high school ball. Yeah. I played there, you know, and it's an amazing facility. It's an old facility, but it's been redone. It's really nice. But, you know, one of the biggest things I always find is I can't imagine there's not a bunch of holes in the wall as close as that one wall is.
Yes. No, the Locksburg gym, you know, of course, for me and my athletes, you know, it's a great place to play. It's a nice gym. The gym has been fixed up really nice over the years, of course. I didn't see what it looked like before they did all the changes and everything like that, but I got a chance to see some of the changes that were done, you know, since I've been here. But our kids, you know, they love the gym. It's a really good shooting gym. Obviously, if you're hitting that day, you know. Yeah. But I really enjoy. It gets really loud in there. It's obviously when you pack it in, it's super loud. It's kind of hard even to talk to my players or them to talk to me because it's so loud. But it's down in Locksburg, just for people to know. And you know, we definitely would love, you know, for people, you know, obviously to come out and support. I know it's in Locksburg versus it in being in D Queen, but you know, The kids, they love seeing people in the gym. Like, to them, it's like they want to be able to put on a show and bring some excitement to the area. And, you know, I know we try to do fun things over there. Like, we'll do our Meet the Colts over there. We'll do our Midnight Madness kind of thing. We do it in daytime. We just call it Midnight Madness. Mm-hmm. It's just where the introduction of the players right. of that sort. And where it's dunk contest, three-point contest, skills challenge. And then they get inter-squad scrimmage. So, our kids, I mean, enjoy going to the gym. Of course, you know, it's a calm drive, you know, from DeQueen to Locksburg. It's a straight shot. But the gym has been good. We have access to it. And so we're very thankful to, you know, have a place where we can go and work out and play our games at. I know at some institutions, other junior college, sometimes they have to share a gym somewhere else or use a high school gym or, you know, they have to keep finding where they're going to play. So I know how it can be very different at the JUCO level if you're not, you know, one of those higher top level JUCOs. And what I mean is, you know, those D1 JUCOs, you know, they're going to have pretty much a lot of sports and things of that sort. So we're very thankful to have a place where we can call our home and for us to play and enjoy it. Of course, yep, your home. Steve Cole always, you know, brags about, you know, all the madness he's done in that gym.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure y'all have heard that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Hey, yeah, more than we wanted to from Cole. But
do you find that when you bring an opponent in there, they have trouble shooting in that gym because it is a different environment than any that's probably around here now?
Yeah, so, I mean, the first thing I would tell you, when opponents come in, which is so amazing, they're always taking pictures and videos.
Yeah.
And they're always asking, man, like, this is real nice. But, yes, to your point about the shooting, for us, I mean, we work in there every day, so we get used to the gym and we kind of know how to feel. But, yes, it kind of creates, which I call a home court advantage.
Sure.
I mean, just like any court, anywhere you go, you have to have certain things that create your home court. That's our home court advantage. We understand the gym. We practice there. We play there. But when other teams come in, yes, they can be at times, you know, where it's hard to, you know, shoot in there. But then there's times where guys are making shots.
And unconscious.
So for me, that's why I say I think it's a good shooting gym both ways. I mean, if you got guys that can really shoot the ball and kind of, you know, it's a gym where you can make shots. And obviously, you know, we want to hopefully be on the end of making more shots than the other team.
Well, you know, one of the things I think about, though, it is unique. And I think that's something you – I mean, I'm going to guess you don't go anywhere else that's got a gym like that.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a unique gym. And that's one thing I say. Every time I have a recruit on campus, bringing in kids to see the school, and when we get there, I mean, that's the first thing. It's just like, wow. Like, I mean, they're just looking at it. It's like, man, it's really nice. And I always tell them, it's an old-school gym. For me, I kind of use a terminology like Hoosiers, you know what I mean? I say it's kind of like one of them Hoosier gyms. If you've never seen that movie, you wouldn't know, especially some of the kids.
That's a great way to describe and it.
So, it is.
But, no, for me, I love the gym. I always say, if I got two baskets and a hoop and I got everything I need, hey, we're good to go.
That's right.
And so our kids are very thankful. I'm very thankful to have a place where we can work out of because I know I can be at some other institutions.
Yeah, well, you know, the only thing I got to say about that is if you start using Hoosiers too much, Cole will say he's Jimmy off of Hoosiers.
I know,
so he was not, believe me.
I got you.
So, but man, we appreciate you coming in. Anything else you want to add before we let you go?
Yes, I just want to say thank you for having me on. Definitely want to, you know, just reach City of DeQueen. Just we want you guys to, we're like a family, man. Come out and support our teams, our women's teams, our men's teams, not just basketball, soccer. You know, obviously, you know, cross country is a sport that we are working on having. You know, hopefully, you know, things will come, you know, into play. And so, like, we're really trying to grow our athletic program and have more things and more options for our locals here. So just any locals out there looking for an opportunity, obviously, you got to have eligibility to play. Don't hesitate. Reach out, and we definitely can see what we can do.
All right. Awesome. Sounds good. Coach Stan Asumnu with the Cossetot Colts basketball program. And we're back, and we appreciate all the UA Cossetot coaches coming in and talk to us. You know, they're a great sponsor, as we have many sponsors, and we'll talk about those in just a minute. But they're a great sponsor all year long, but we don't get to talk a whole lot about college athletics as we're talking about high school athletics mostly. But go out and support these local UA Cossetot teams whenever you have the opportunity to do so. Tony, one more thing we want to talk about before we go. We watched the home run derby.
Yeah.
I know you were pretty excited. There was a Pittsburgh Pirate there for
There's not
quite
been
a
much
while.
To cheer about for Pirate fans. Yeah. But O'Neill Cruz had a very good – matter of fact, if he's not in the same bracket with Cal Raleigh, who ends up winning the thing, he's probably in the finals anyway.
Yeah.
Hit the longest ball hit last night, 513 feet.
Whoa.
That's almost two football fields.
Yeah.
So this is just kind of like a fun thing so you can get the best – Yeah. homers and
a fun
stuff.
Thing where you can win $1 million.
$1 million. So do they? Is there a pitcher or is it like a machine?
Well, they got
you pick your pitcher.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
They got guys
like Cal Raleigh's dad.
Right. Right.
Was pitching to him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think the Pirates, their guy that regularly throws batting practice was throwing to Cruz, and that's who most of them pick. They want to see that guy they're seeing in batting practice every day. And of course, they're grooving the ball.
Yeah.
You know where, it's still pretty impressive to watch.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch that home run derby.
Yeah, it is. I got confused. I'm not going to lie to you. I watched it, and I kind of got lost.
Yeah?
They put to me, it's not about who hits the most home runs.
Yeah.
They got, like, if you hit one so many feet, you get an extra out.
Yeah.
Or if you, you know, or and you get to do this and you get to do that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to me, if you're playing in a ballpark and you hit it over the fence, it's a home run.
Yeah.
Right?
It doesn't matter if it's.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Did you see the 12-year-old kid that robbed one of the home runs last night and they end up giving it to him?
Oh, yeah, I did see that because they talked about it for a long time.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah,
did he catch it?
Yeah. He goes up like a major leaguer and gets it before it goes over the wall.
Yeah.
And they said it would have went over and they gave it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to see those people hit those home runs that go just towering
shots.
I'd
like to see just what's the longest one ever hit, do you know?
No.
In the home run contest?
600 or something?
The one O'Neill Cruz hit was the longest that they have had in many years. It's hard to tell, though. They've been doing this home run derby a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure they always measured them.
I mean, you know, I remember one time Josh Hamilton, when he was a Texas Ranger, he in one round, and it was different. They did it differently then. But he had like 30-something in one round. But he wore himself out, and he didn't win.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hit so many home runs.
You
kind of
got to pace yourself a little bit. There's some mental aspect to it. You can call one time out, take a 30-second breather. When you do that, you know, what I noticed last night, the guys, Cal Raleigh's dad did a great job of timing where he got all 40 pitches in the 4 minutes. Some of them were leaving pitches out there, leaving four and five pitches out there because their pitcher wasn't throwing. You either get the 40 pitches or 4 minutes. Mm. And Raleigh's dad was just – they had that all timed out perfect,
man. Wow.
But he's hit 38 home runs in the regular season, so – he's quite the stud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Switch hitter and catcher.
Yeah. I follow a guy on YouTube who just has fun with it. Like, he just does a lot of, like, different batting fun stuff. Like, can you hit a home run with a Nerf bat and stuff like that? And then I watched him do the cork bat. He was like, let's just see. And he, like, made a cork bat, and it was unreal how long he was able to hit some of those, you know, in an actual park, too. So.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, overall, a really cool, fun event. Unfortunately, the rest of baseball is kind of boring.
All-star game taking will all be tonight.
The most fun parts all in one thing.
I think there's a celebrity softball game or something today.
Oh, so I hope Jake and Jacob get through that. They're, you know, the Bunger boys are down there for All-Star weekend, and they're having a great time from all the Facebook posts I see.
Yeah.
So I hope they enjoy that. And I know they will.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I hope they got me on the O'Cruz autograph.
Yeah. Maybe they will. I bet you he'll be trying.
I bet he will be too.
Yeah. That interesting fact that, you know, I was talking to Jay before they go, so are you flying or are you driving? He said, we're driving. He said, we have a lot of trouble getting all Jacob's balls that he takes to get signed for autographs through security.
Yeah, I bet.
Wow.
On the planes. Huh. So it takes. So it,
I wouldn't have thought of that.
Yeah. Yeah. But that was interesting, I thought.
That is interesting,
But anyway, that's pretty much all we got for this time. You know, next time new season.
Yeah, it's just a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. A
couple weeks, and then we're it's
first August. It's football time, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's football time.
We'll open a can of that on the podcast.
Yeah, we're going to open a can of that. We got some new, exciting news to talk about.
Yeah.
In season three.
Yeah.
Nothing going to be said about it right now.
Yep.
But we got some new stuff that's going to be talked.
Bigger, and, better than ever. Yep. Every time. Yep. Every year.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. But one thing I want to mention real quickly. Congratulations to Jay Bunyard for being put in the Broadcasting Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
In Arkansas.
Yep.
Man.
That's a huge honor.
It is. And he spent his entire life dedicated to radio, mm-hmm. and making it better, and the community of the Queen. And just congratulations to him on that honor.
And thanks for letting us use this equipment.
That's to right. This podcast. Yeah, that's right. So I didn't have to say that. No. also want to mention our sponsors real quickly.
Yes.
We've had these sponsors for a couple of years now, most of them, and we just appreciate them so much. Martin Veterinary Services and Ashdown Veterinary Clinic, UA Cossetot, Horatio State Bank, Toad Thumper Lures, Union Bank of MENA, the Queen Motorsports, Domtar, Shelter Insurance Woods Agency, and also Shelter Insurance Todd Moore over in Dirks, and Adderose Designs. We appreciate all of them so much for making us able to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And as we always tell you, we're doing it for the kids, and we appreciate them letting us do it for that. So until next season.
Well, yeah, in August we'll start with our high school football previews, and we'll do it all over again.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yep. We'll see you next season.
See you next season.